This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more, go to BraintreePayments.com/TNW.
Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, buddy, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by John Bob. How you doing, John?
Hey, Andrew. How's it going?
Going good. Going good. I don't know how the weather is where you are, but it is muggy here in New York. It is everybody's sneezing. Everybody's coughing. It's like allergy season hit like a month later because of El Nino.
Yeah. I feel it's like, pretty nice here, though.
I feel like it's everybody now.
Allergy season is a big thing, but the weather's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's not bad here either. I'm hanging in. You're gonna see me, you know, blinking a little too much today because my eyes are killing me. But we'll get through it. We'll get through the day. There is a lot to talk about. But before I wanted to go, you know, go into today's topic, I bought an Apple TV. I bought a new Apple TV.
Oh yeah, the fourth gen.
Is it the fourth gen? I guess it would be,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the fourth gen.
Yeah, isn't that crazy that this thing's been out for so many years and it's only the fourth generation?
Yeah, that's because Apple didn't really care about updating it for like 3-4 years.
Yeah, so I got the latest one, and I bought a controller also, because the reason why I got it is not necessarily for the content. By the way, we're on there. Our show's on there. It works great.
Good.
There's so many apps on that platform now. Very different than it used to be. I mean, essentially, but if you're looking for media consumption, it's the big guys, right? You want the Hulus. You want Netflix. Plex is on there, all the networks. I'm trying to think if there's anybody that is not on there, and I can't think of
Amazon.
Amazon isn't, and Google isn't, obviously, for obvious reasons. But I have to tell you.
Which is why you can't find the Apple TV in the Amazon store.
Yes, that is exactly why. But you know what is funny? It came from the same distribution place that that Amazon distributes from. It's the same facility that it comes from. It's so bizarre. It's like Amazon won't ship it, but Amazon is holding on to it. I don't know exactly how it's working out, but they're doing something weird there. So I got this thing, and I got the controller, and I got it because I have not heard anything about gaming on this platform from people that own it. Like, nobody's doing any kind of gaming on this platform. And the same goes for Fire TV. Like, you have a Fire TV, I have one, and I know a bunch of people, but nobody games on these things. The same goes for the Google Nexus box that they have. So I bought it specifically for the reason to do like a trial to see what the gaming experience is on a box like this. You know, are these contenders at all? I have to tell you, so I downloaded all the apps. It's a pain in the butt because now you got to download everything all over again. You got to put your password in for every single one. Then you got to put in that cable provider stuff for like the NBC and CBS app and all that stuff. So it literally took me like an hour to go through all of it. The cool thing about Apple is that because of Siri, you talk to it, so you don't ever have to type on this thing. So you don't have to do like A and D, you know, you don't have to do that. It auto remembers. If you're syncing from an Apple device, it'll sync so if you have the app already, it'll sync the password and everything along with it, which is pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
So when you have to put in like your cable provider and stuff like that. So let's say it's a Viacom thing. Let's say you're doing CBS, MTV. Give me another Viacom station, whatever. Whatever the other Viacom is, or NBC, right? NBC Universal. Once you put it into one NBC Universal app, it knows it on all the other ones. So you don't have to go and put it in for like, you know, this channel, that channel. So that was a cool part. I had $30 that I got for Easter in the Easter egg hunt for it was a iTunes gift card. So I was like, oh, okay, so I'll use these, you know, because I rarely buy something on iTunes. So I scanned them in and on my laptop, because that's how easy it is. You literally hold the card up and it scans and puts it in. And I downloaded a bunch of games. Yeah. The gaming experience is very good. right? Like, it transitions really well to the big screen. The apps that I downloaded transitioned well. But it seems like the trend that they're stuck in right now when it comes to gaming on a platform like this is that they don't want to, like the basketball game, like the NBA 2K16, whatever the game is that they have,
yeah,
that type of games don't look great. But if you're doing
it doesn't have the rendering power.
It doesn't have the rendering power. So like that's essentially a waste. But if you're into like those 8-bit style scrolls, you know, the side scroller type games or any of those iPad games where it's more like strategy, it looks unbelievable. I downloaded this soccer game. It's like 8-bit soccer. It's like 8-bit soccer HD, which is like a conundrum of words mushed together. I'll tell you, the gameplay is great on the controller. I have a Bluetooth controller that I bought. It feels great to play. I got the DuckTales game, which looks unbelievable. So the quality of gaming is not bad at all. It's just getting the developers
to work. It all depends
on what
kind of game you're playing.
That's one. I bought some like racer game, like car racing game. I was actually
Racer.
I forgot which one it was. It could have been. And it looked great. Like, it was actually, I was shocked how good the graphics look coming out.
Road Rash. That was a good one back in the day.
Is that the one with the trucks?
No, this was, well, I don't exactly remember it, but
it's a motorcycle one where you used to hit each other.
Yeah, the motorcycle
one. Yes. I think there is, can you believe that there are redos of that game already? Road Rash, Road Redemption. Oh my God, They still make this game. That's amazing. Yeah, so I have to tell you, I'm so far so good. I'm curious to see what my experience is going to be like. I'm curious to see what Jess thinks about this, about the Apple TV. Because we got so used to having...
Just the gaming part of it or just overall?
Just overall. Like the controller and everything. Like, I like that it has a volume control now on this thing, which Amazon doesn't. Roku doesn't either. You can't control your TV's volume. It knows already, once you connect it, how to control the volume. Which is cool. So there's a lot going on with this box. I'm really hopeful for the platform and the development of apps. You know, as far as content consumption goes, it has everything that you want. As far as gaming goes, I don't know. The games that I downloaded, you know, I got like 5-6 games. They all seem pretty good.
Yeah.
So little review. You know, I'll probably be playing around more with it as the weeks go. I only had like an hour. You know, today, to kind of when the baby was sleeping, to kind of play around. And I wanted to talk about it today because we talk about this all the time, right? We talk about these set-top boxes and which one is the right one. And it kind of leads right into one of our stories here. And it's about Microsoft reportedly launching two Xbox TV-style devices, which is interesting that they're launching two of them, John.
Yeah.
So one
I
device
that was a little weird too.
It's a little weird. So one device will be a Chromecast style device, and it'll require an Xbox One to stream content too.
So that first one, they're making it so that you have to have an existing Xbox One.
See, I
it's basically a Chromecast specifically for the Xbox One.
So essentially, that means if I have an Xbox One in my living room, I could take this device and put it in my bedroom, or I could put it in the kids' room, and they will also have access to the Xbox One.
For streaming games, yes.
For streaming games. And to be honest, the latency will be probably stellar on that thing. Listen.
It's for those people that want to do gaming in a room other than their Xbox One, which... To me, it doesn't make sense.
You know where it does make sense? I'll tell you where. You play games and your kid plays games, or you got two kids, and they play games, but sometimes they don't play them at the same time. So rather than you could just have the set-top box in the living room, and then you could have the Xbox.
Sounds spoiled to me.
You know what? We are all a little spoiled here. The second one is the more interesting device, in my opinion. It's in line to be a competitor to an Amazon Fire TV or similar streaming device. While it, too, will have the ability to stream Xbox One games from the main console, it'll also allow you to install universal apps and play basic games from the Microsoft Store, which is very interesting. So it's essentially an Apple TV, a Roku, a Fire TV.
That's what it sounds like, but you know, there's not a lot of information about this. And given the fact that they have these two devices, I don't know. It's just something about the details for these devices is not adding up for me, and it doesn't sound very interesting.
Well, we'll find out in about a week and a half. And like, I'll tell you what the selling point of this thing is, right? The Chromecast thing, I get it. You could have an Xbox in a living room, and then you could have the Xbox in your bedroom, and you could stream the games. That's cool. Fine. The other device would be interesting because of the exact discussion we were just having. I bought the Apple TV, and I want to play games on it, and I was testing out the games. Yes, they're basic games, and Apple really doesn't have too much of a gaming library on this on the Apple TV platform because it's still new, and they opened up, you know, this idea of developing for, you know, recently to developers for that TV. Microsoft, on the other hand, has a extremely large library of games available to play. You know, they have a catalog of those Xbox Arcade games. They have a catalog of old games. If they market this thing as a gaming box, first, you know, it's a lower end gaming box where if you're someone like me that wants to play some games and doesn't want to spend $400 on an Xbox, you may be inclined, or $300, you may be inclined to buy this. I'm curious on what it means by like basic games. You know, like, are we talking solitaire or are we talking like Castle Crashers?
Yeah, but at this point, you'd be better off just spending the $300 for an Xbox One. Quite frankly.
I would too. Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to spend, you know, $50 on one device just strictly for gaming, you should just spend $300 for an Xbox One, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Here's what I don't like is that it sounds like they're trying to make these, or at least one of them, a TV set-top box.
Yes, they are.
And this doesn't work for me because Microsoft is notoriously bad at this. And this is something that they're already late to the game, and they don't even have an app store for this. They simply do not have an app store for TV apps.
Well, they have universal apps, John.
What I'm talking about is the same problem that they have with Windows Phone. It's that nobody's using a Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Why would they use a set-top box?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good question.
And they don't care about TV anyway. They've done away with Windows Media Center and said, oh, we don't care about Windows Media Center.
I wonder
so
if this
unless
could...
they're specifically designing something strictly as a set-top box, I have absolutely no interest in it.
Yeah, I'm curious on what this
box
will be.
I want them to do something because...
Yeah, I know you do.
I'd love for them to actually do a new version of Windows Media Center. I have an HD Home Run Prime, and I'm still running Windows 7.
So I have a question.
And
so
even
why
Windows Media Center on Windows 7 does not work correctly.
Even Windows... See, what would... And we've discussed this a couple times, and I know a lot of the people in the audience, they're in the same boat as you, but what would be your other option? Like, if you were to spend some money, what would the option be?
It's a tricky question because it depends exactly what you're looking to do.
I want to replace Media Center. I want to do everything you're doing right now, and I want to replace it.
There really isn't anything.
Nothing that you can even buy, no boxes, no nothing.
There are a couple of applications, but they're nowhere near even the level of Windows Media Center.
Yeah. And see, that's a problem, and that's a major gap. But I guess the way that they see it is, it's not the people that were using Media Center were a very specific group of people, and a lot of the people that did,
those people are still around and very vocal.
So, what is the prime reason why you do it? Because you record the content, right? That's part of the problem.
I record and watch content.
Yeah. It's. I'm curious to know. I would love to see how other people implement this, and if people have left, because listen, most people from what I know, you consume a lot of content. You are an exception.
Oh, yeah.
Because you watch all different types of stuff, all different. It's not like you're into one specific thing.
The issues sort of negate that. The issues that I'm starting to have between the Tuner and Windows Media Center are starting to make me look at other options.
Okay, so what would you do? Let's just pirate everything,
well,
John.
the only true legal viable option would be to get a dedicated appliance, for example, from your cable company.
From the cable company, so set-top box.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be the... Okay. Which they all suck, so...
So they're supposed to announce this stuff, I believe, next week at E3. I don't remember the exact date for E3, but I know it's in a week or two.
Yeah, it's in a week.
And so Microsoft is supposed to announce these new devices. To me, the details are still kind of sketchy.
Yeah. I mean, we're guessing at this point, and we're going based on very little information that Brad, actually, from Throwout.com released about this. So it will be interesting to see in a week and a half how this plays out and what they actually release. And
yeah,
how...
I'm setting my expectations extremely low and to the point that I don't know that I really give a crap.
the big story is that they're going to have another, they're updating the Xbox. Sometime probably early 2017 or maybe even later this year. We don't have a time frame for it. And it's going to have 4K support. It's going to be a different Xbox. It's going to be an updated Xbox One.
Yeah, Sony's going to do the same thing with the PlayStation.
Sony's
so
also doing the same thing with VR, yeah.
It's just, you know, we've gotten into that cycle where there's significant advances that warrant new hardware.
Yeah, I think the problem is that these two devices came at a time where we were transitioning over from 1080
yeah.
to 4K, and now VR is making a major play into this, and the longevity of the current generation console, it's not going to be like the Xbox 360 where it was 8 years. I don't think it would be possible to do it. So I think these refreshes are going to be something that we're going to be seeing. I know a lot of people are going to be upset over the fact that they just bought a brand new Xbox and there's another one coming, but at the end of the day, it's for the better. You're going to get better quality. It's going to, you know, technically it's going to be full HD gaming instead of the 9, whatever they're doing, 980, 960p. The other thing is that the current generation Xbox is getting a smaller and quieter frame. So they're slimming this thing down. It's not going to be this giant brick that you keep, you know, in your living room. It's actually an eyesore when you look at it. So a lot of changes are coming to the Xbox.
Yes.
And we'll find out more next week, and we'll find out what Sony is going to be doing also, which will be interesting to talk about. Guys, before we move on, I want to thank our sponsor, and they've been with us for a while, and that's Braintree. By next year, maybe by next week, there could be a whole new payment method, a whole new way to accept payments. Maybe it'll be the next Bitcoin, maybe it'll be the next Apple Pay. Places around me are accepting Samsung Pay, Android Pay, Apple Pay. There's another payment method that I can't think of that like Walmart is doing. You have all these different types of way of paying for stuff. And if you are a business owner and you're a developer, this could be a big time hassle for you because every time your mobile application, your app has to be updated every single time you do this. And that means more coding, more hiring, more of a mess to configure, more of a mess to set up. It doesn't matter if you're accepting pounds, PayPal, Bitcoin, Apple Pay, does not matter. With Braintree, it's a full-stack platform, meaning you could easily adapt to whatever the future is going to hold for you. You're going to have no problems accepting the next wave of payment. If you go to BraintreePayments.com/TNW, you can learn more there. It's simple. It's secure. They do a token-based system, which, John, I know you're a big fan of, the token-based systems.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if you are a vendor or if you're the customer, when you provide this information to purchase something or someone gives you the information, you don't actually hang on to the credit card information. A token is generated, and that is the authentication to whatever company that the payment is coming from. So you don't have to worry about things getting, these data breaches happening. It's very safe. Braintree Code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients. The SDK is in many, many languages, and it's a very elegant piece of code, literally 10 lines of code. And if you're the developer of this and you need to call someone, guess what? Someone is there to help you. BraintreePayments.com/TNW. No late nights, no complicated procedures, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the show, for, of course, supporting GFK Network. BraintreePayments.com/TNW. Actually, I like these guys a lot. I know I hear from a lot of our viewers that have implemented Braintree in their payments, and they're very, very happy with them. So you guys should definitely check it out. John, let's talk about the iPhone.
Yes, another event that's happening in a couple of weeks.
Jeez, so we have E3 to cover. We have this to cover.
I could care less about E3. I'm not a gamer.
I think I'm going to do E3.
You can talk about E3 all you want.
No, I think you know what I'll do? I'll do it with Nick. I know you don't like the gaming stuff, so I think I'll do it with Nick, or I'll do it with Paul during the Microsoft announcement. I'll do something for E3 this year. But this Apple one will be the major one that we're going to definitely be covering.
Yes.
The iPhone 7 will be announced in a couple of weeks, we're guessing, at WWDC.
Well, not the iPhone 7, information pertaining to the iPhone 7, such as the new version of iOS.
Yes, the new version of iOS will be announced. The next version of the Mac OS will be announced.
Yeah, and it sounds like really with WWDC this year, they're going to focus mainly on software.
Yeah, so I've been reading as to what they would be changing, and I was talking to Paul about this, about the Mac platform. And, you know, I've been using a Mac on a regular basis for the last, since 2009, it's been my laptop. So quite a few years, you know, 7-8 years. When I go from the Mac to Windows 10, I have to tell you, and I'm a Mac user, I feel like Windows 10 is a little bit more of a modern operating system in the sense that they really haven't done much on the Windows, on the Mac side. You know, this is their secondary thing. It's all about iOS. I would like to see more iOS integration. You know, the fact that there are some rumors coming that maybe the feature for this operating system is that you can run iOS apps within the Mac. You know, there's things like that that need to be addressed on the Mac side. I highly doubt we're going to get that this time around. But you're right. It's going to be major software sided at this event. Is there anything you're looking forward to, John, at WWDC? And then I want to talk about the rumors that are coming.
Not really.
There's nothing that's sticking out to you.
No.
Well, I'll tell you one.
It's one of those events where it's not necessarily the most exciting event that they do, where they're like announcing a bunch of new hardware. So they might announce some refreshes, but.
Yeah, we're going to get a MacBook refresh. I'm going to be very
upset. A lot of this also pertains to both the stories that we have in this block. But one of the reports is saying that the iPhone 7, the next series of the iPhone, is finally going to drop the 16-gigabyte base model, which is something
Thank
that God. Both you and I and several other people have been screaming about for the last 2 or 3 years. Now, why does Apple still have an iPhone starting at 16 gigabytes when clearly with the beginning of iOS 9, it was extremely difficult, if not impossible, to upgrade your iPhone to the new iOS version because there's not enough space on a 16-gigabyte iPhone.
How about an iPad, right? Like, does it make sense at all for the iPad considering the apps are much larger? It's a useless model. And I know people are going to say, well, I use a 16 gig and I'm perfectly fine. There are exceptions, but almost everybody that I know that has a 16 gig model, this thing is packed.
Yeah. And recently it doesn't make sense because with iOS 6S and iPhone 6S and iPhone 6, they actually dropped the 32-gigabyte model.
They did, and
so
it goes 64.
So you went from 16 to 64.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were your two starting models, 16 gigabytes or 64 gigabytes. And with this latest rumor, Apple is being said that they're going to have a starting base of at least 32 gigabytes, with other options being 128 and 256. So this latest rumor is saying that they're finally going to drop 16 gigabytes in favor of 32 gigabytes.
Yeah.
Yet they're dropping the 64 gigabyte model now.
Yeah, so.
So they're bringing back 32 gigabytes, but dropping 64.
That's what it seems like it's going to happen, which is crazy because the 64 gig model is. So, but I mean, if they're replacing the 64 with a 128, right?
Mm-hmm.
then I'm fine with that. You know what I mean? Like, if there's no price change, I'm okay with that. I'm not as concerned. Like, I think it's really,
well, this is
shitty
clearly
Apple
a
way
for
of doing
them
things
to grab another $100 from you still, so that they can have a model that's the base model largely being too small for most people, and then forcing them up to another $100 for the next model up with more space.
Yeah,
which is the same as the 16 and 64. They just want that gap there where they have, you know, the base model being just a little too small, and then nothing in between.
Nothing in between. So you have
two
to
models
jump. Yeah,
that would necessarily fit right.
Yeah, you have to jump.
They don't want to do 64 gigabytes because then everybody's going to start doing the 64 gigabyte model.
Okay,
that'll be perfect for the majority of people out there, and they're just going to do that base model. And so I don't know. It's just,
so we're looking at 32, 128, and 256 storage.
Yes.
Okay. The 32 gig will take over for the 16 gig, correct? So it's going to be that price
point. Yes.
Okay. The 64, which was the next step, the $100 more version. So what is this? Let's say let's go $199 for the 32 gig. I'm just making the prices here. $299 for the it would have been for the 64 gig, but instead it's the 128 gig.
If they happen to do that.
Or they're going to jump another $50 and make it $150 more. You know what I mean?
It would not surprise me if Apple did that, because they're very weird with their pricing structures and whatnot these days.
I would be very disappointed. You know, if they're just replacing the 64 gig with a 128 and they're replacing the 16 with a 32, I get it. It makes no sense to me. It still makes no sense to me. They could have kept the 32 and the 64 and that, but whatever. That's Apple does their weird crap.
That just seems strange after they dropped 32 gigabytes for the past couple models.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying is that they stopped offering 32 gigabyte models, and it just seems weird to me that they would have why didn't they just start these past two models at 32 gigabytes? And then drop 64 gigabytes in favor of 128.
Yeah, in favor of 128. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's a bizarre way that they do this. You know, the bigger the screen, the better the camera, the larger the apps are going. I have to tell you, on the iPad, Microsoft Word is like 700 megs. Think about that, right? Text messages. Most people don't delete their text messages. So all those photos... Nope. All those photos, all those messages that you've been piling on for years is taking up gigabytes and gigabytes of space.
I had to do that earlier this year where I had to go through and delete a bunch of photos and videos because I started running out of space.
Yeah,
and I have 64 gigabytes.
I had to do that on Jess's iPad because, you know, the messages also go to the iPad. And she didn't understand why she was running out of space because she doesn't take any photos with this iPad. She barely runs apps. But it was the text messages with all the images attached to it. That it was like 8 gigs, and it's slowing everything down because you're running out of storage and the thing's working harder. It's the 16 gigs are essentially useless, guys. I'm not saying if you never intend on installing applications on this thing and you're just gonna have it there for when every now and then usage, fine, go with a 16 gig and you'll be okay. But if you're actually going to do anything on these devices, you should get the one model higher. I have a 16 gig MacBook Air, iPad Air, and I have to tell you, I have to delete and install apps on a regular basis. Not fun.
Yeah.
Not fun.
So there was another interesting story that came out this past week from a Japanese newspaper. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce the newspaper name.
Nikkei.
It's Nikkei or Nikkei.
I think it's Nikkei.
I'm sure I'm getting that wrong, and I apologize. But they're claiming that Apple is going to move away from a 2-year refresh cycle with the iPhone to a 3-year cycle.
Okay.
They say that Apple will likely take 3 years between full model changes of its iPhone devices, a year longer than its current devices. And in a typical 2-year term, fall 2016 would see a major upgrade, but changes on the model to be launched this fall will be minor, such as improved camera quality.
Okay.
The paper also says that this change is driven by two factors. The move is largely due to smartphone functions having little room left for major enhancements, and a slowing market is another factor. So this doesn't really surprise me. This is something that we've seen rumors of for a while now with the iPhone 7 not being a major refresh. Because as it stands now, the iPhone 7 is not going to see a major refresh like we've seen in the past between, the iPhone 5S and the iPhone 6.
So, I mean, the we've always been on this 18 to 24 month cycle for these phones where...
Yeah, where, like the iPhone 5 comes out and the iPhone 5S is the successor to that. And it's the same large design that you've seen in the iPhone 5, but with enhancements and refinements.
Yeah.
Whereas now what you're going to see is that it's going to take 3 years now before you see those major hardware changes between devices.
And I don't blame them because...
You might have, the iPhone 6... Or let's say the iPhone 7, the iPhone 7S, and then the iPhone 7 something else. So you're going to have three generations now
of the same
a particular model before major refresh.
I don't blame them. And this is something that we've spoken about. We as consumers and people, tech pundits and people that are really into this, we got spoiled for the last couple of years. And I talk about 2011, for example, is a great example of a lot of innovation, a lot of changes aggressively happening in the hardware space for computing. We went from having a netbook to these ultra slim laptops to all these, to the iPad 2. I still think the iPad 2 was the best, the biggest leap for this technology. Between the iPad 2 and the iPhone and all these changes that were happening, we kind of got spoiled into thinking, oh my God, what's next year? What's next year? What's next year? At some point, it's going to slow down. There's only
even with the addition of the fingerprint scanner, that was a huge deal.
By the way, you know what? I thought that was not a big deal, but until I started using it on my Samsung here, because remember, I'm coming from the iPhone world. I think this fingerprint thing is great. It's really a major, major thing. And right now mine isn't working because I cracked the screen. So it's working a little funky and I have to get it replaced, but, I think that was a major, that's a major step up, but how much thinner and faster can they make this thing every single year?
Well, that's
I would rather stick to the form factor. No, stick to the form factor.
They keep talking about making the iPhone 7 thinner by removing the 1.8 millimeter, the eighth inch jack.
For your
headphones.
Yeah.
Just to make it thinner. I'm like, do you really need to make it thinner? It's one thing to remove that jack for something else, but to remove it for the sake of making the phone thinner when you don't need to make it thinner.
You don't need to make it it's fine, but I get it. That's how it goes. Thinner, faster, lighter, quicker. But you know what I would like them to work on?
No, it's the whole thing of making phones smaller.
Yeah, but
you remember how,
At a point in time, how small can you make the phone?
And you had the Motorola Razr.
Yeah, how about the Zoolander phone? Remember the little... No, there was a smaller one than that. It was a Motorola.
And now here we are.
I had it.
Most people want a 5-inch, 5.5-inch device, and it's the exact opposite.
I'm trying to find this phone. Here it is. I found it, actually. The V8088. If you guys want to look up this tiny, tiny phone, I still have mine here somewhere. This phone was tiny.
If you can find it.
And it came out in June of 2000. Okay. I wish I pulled it up on this other machine. This phone was like this big, and I lost it the first day of school. I paid like $450. It was literally like a Zoolander phone. It was the funniest thing. First day of school, I go to school and I got this thing on a clip and it just fell. And who knows, some guy took it and probably sold it.
They're going to start calling the iPhone 7 the iPhone Razr.
But you know what it is though? You know what I would love them to work on? And as someone within the industry, I would love them to say, you know what? 3 years, we're going to stick to this form factor, but every year we're going to get a 10% battery life improvements. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there. That's something that I would die to have, because the number one challenge for me is not taking a good photo with this. It's not, being quick enough and multitasking and performance of my phone and playing games. It's, will I get through the day on this battery?
Yes, that's what they need to focus on. not that's where we're really lacking advancement is it's in the longevity of a freaking battery.
Listen, like, putting a bigger
seriously,
battery.
We can blow through a battery in half a day. Look at the market for these these power cells, the juice packs.
Yeah.
And all that
humongous
stuff. That's a huge market. Almost anybody that has a cell phone that they use regularly has one of these.
Yeah, I went to the baseball game with Nick. I'm going to tell you right now. It was Nick. It was Bob that took us to the game. My brother and Bob, one of Bob's friends. Every single one of us had a charging pack with us. Every single one of us.
Yeah.
So we're buying these beautiful phones, these elegant phones, and then what are we doing? We're connecting this thing and walking around like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy to think about it, but we have to because these phones just do not last the day. They don't last the day if you're using it actively.
Yeah, part of that is because the screens are so big and we do so much on them. But at the same time, it's like you would think 2016. There's a lot of things I think by 2016 we should have already had by now.
Guys.
Like you'd think by now there'd be a better way to brush your teeth other than, you know, toothpaste and floss picks.
What do you want?
You
some
know,
sort of
it's
magic
2016.
Some sort of magic
here we
jar
are,
you put on once a week.
Still using the same thing 100 years later.
You know what, John? Sometimes you say something and I don't agree with you. Another time you say something and it is so brilliant. Why in 2016? Why are we brushing our teeth? Why can't we just have one gel? We put it on once a week and it's working. It's these positive microbes that are eating at the bad bacteria and your teeth are super clean all the time. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. That's a great thought. You know what? Forget about the smart car, Apple. Forget about batteries. Redo the toothbrush. Just reinvent brushing your teeth. You know what I mean? So there was another story here I wanted to go into. MySpace got hacked. Did you get that letter from them?
I did. I got an email, I believe, yesterday or the day before saying that my account might have been compromised and that I should log in and change my password.
I would have if I knew that I had a MySpace account. I have no idea what email address it would be associated to.
I have no idea what my password would even be.
Yeah.
I could not tell you the last time I looked at MySpace.
It's
let alone logged in.
Is anybody using it? Like, what do you think their usage is?
Well, they said that 360 million people were hacked. And this is basically anybody that created an account prior to 2013.
So everybody.
And sadly, Time Inc. just bought MySpace like a couple months ago.
So MySpace is nothing. It's nothing like it used to be. It's just a name now. But I'm at MySpace.com.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm at MySpace.com right now. And I don't. There's no similarity between the old platform and what, you know, what it is today.
I mean, they don't have a place for your top 8 friends anymore.
No, and you don't have like a special gifified.
Dang.
I mean, it's mostly about like music news and industry news. Like it says, the new women.
Yeah, that's because Justin Timberlake owned it.
Yeah, which is interesting.
But no, it's like, you know, MySpace got hacked. Does anybody care?
Nope.
No.
Nope. But if you do have a MySpace account,
how many people even know what MySpace is?
You know what's funny? I would love to ask like a 20-year-old, right? Like a 18, 19, 20-year-old about MySpace and what they think of MySpace because they would have been way too young for MySpace.
Yeah, it's one of those videos like Kids Reacts or whatever.
An 18-year-old, so when did MySpace...
Kids React to Yahoo and MySpace.
10 years ago, so 2006. So MySpace came out in 2003, 4? Yeah, so
no
yeah, it would have been probably around there. It's interesting. This is big news actually for me because I'm big on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. I tweet all day long with all my accounts, and I just tweet to myself. I just make fake accounts and I just tell myself I'm pretty and I'm handsome. Twitter will drop.
That's true, by the way.
Twitter drops media and at name replies from 140 limit. Now this has been a big major thing. You know, part of the magic of tweeting is kind of putting your thoughts together and then editing exactly what you need to say in 140 characters. And it is a struggle sometimes when you're trying to make a post because if I'm linking to you, it'll shorten the link, but it still counts it. If I'm doing an at, it'll still count it. So God forbid you have a long username. So this is something that people have been wanting them to do for a long time. I believe soon photos and videos won't be included in that tally as well, freeing up more space for people to write. What's more, usernames and replies won't count against the limit either. This is going to start taking effect.
What's going on here is that usernames and links have a defined character limit, because everything, either the username is limited to 15 characters, so they can easily exempt that because it's something that's registered. It's not like a hashtag where the hashtag could be any number of characters. And links, which automatically get shortened by Twitter to their URL shortener, which is, I believe, 18 characters long, 18 to 24, I think.
Yeah.
And that's easily defined in their software to be able to be exempt.
I'll tell you, this is really going to change the way that people are tweeting and the way that they're putting their thoughts together. The only thing I'm a little concerned with is with like spamming, since there's no limit now. So I could pretty much do an at reply to like 500 people.
No, you cannot.
So how are they limiting this?
They're limiting it to the first username that you are replying to. You actually have to use, you know, like an official program, and you actually have to reply to somebody using the reply button.
Okay,
that's
so
not
if
just
I'm doing
simply putting everybody's username in there, that is not going to work that way.
Okay, so let's say you tweeted something. I do at Suncast, and then I want to also add Paul Therott to it, so I do at Therott. At Therott will still count against my characters, but you won't.
As far as I understand the way that this is going to work, yes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, and I actually like that a lot. I like that a lot. Because right now, I believe
it's
when
about time, you know, it's like they needed to come up with a way, and I think this is a very good way of increasing the character limit.
Yeah. So Google is going to be doing something interesting. They're going to be they might name and shame slow to update Android vendors. This is interesting because it seems like now they're going to get a little aggressive here.
Yeah, what they've done is that they have created a list of manufacturers and vendors that are slow to update their Android devices with updates. And right now, the list is private. And I believe this is according to Bloomberg, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see here. Bloomberg tipsters claim that Google has created this list that marks Android manufacturers based on the timeliness of their updates. The list is private right now, but the company is considering making them public to shame vendors that drag their heels, hoping that those brands too sluggish to make the list will strive to do better. So this is basically them possibly identifying the manufacturers that are slow to update their Android devices and software and possibly making the list public so that everybody knows that these vendors, these manufacturers are slow.
So if it's not the manufacturer and it's the carrier, are they going to shame the carrier as well?
It doesn't seem that way. They said that other work is being done behind the scenes too. Google has been asking carriers to shorten their notoriously long update testing cycles. Sprint has confirmed it, and Verizon reportedly has too. And they're pressing carriers to skip tests entirely for security updates, which to me makes a lot of sense. If it's a security update is normally something that's very specific. It's changing something very minute that shouldn't affect things terribly network-wide.
Yeah.
And in reality, security updates should be automatic.
So I'll tell you something. On the Samsung side, they have pushed security updates within the Samsung Galaxy store. So they're able to kind of bypass the carrier in that sense. But like Samsung put out a major bug fix, for example.
Be sitting there, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road before you give your customers a security update.
But that's what they did. So with one of these updates, AT&T got it first, Sprint got a second, Verizon sat on this thing for like 2 months, and then Verizon got the update. So it's really, really wonky how this works, and I'm hoping that some of these vendors are able to kind of push and say, listen, guys, to the carrier, let us push this out. Let us do the bug fixes. Let us be responsible for this rather than you guys having to do the testing. I don't know. I don't know how they'll do it, because this has been a uphill battle for Android users for many, many years. This is why people are making their own ROMs and why they're updating on their own and doing all this crazy stuff. You don't see it on the Apple side at all.
You have jailbreaking, but
how often is someone jailbreaking?
It's not nearly as big of a community as you find with Android.
Yeah. Do you one more story? You want to go into this?
Yeah. So Facebook is going to be introducing a new AI that understands everything you post. Its latest artificial intelligence system is known as Deep Text, and it has some pretty serious implications as far as privacy goes. The social network is interested in implementing a system that can help analyze thousands of posts per second across 20 different languages, all with near human accuracy.
Wow.
So what does this mean for you as a Facebook user? Soon the company will be able to identify what you're saying in posts, messages, and other content available via your profile and other pages to better offer suggestions and other helpful options. For example, if you were to post a status update about needing a ride or converse with a friend about when you might need to be picked up, Facebook might suggest you hit up Uber or Lyft services via their messenger transportation integration.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah.
I don't see... Yes, I understand the privacy implications of this, but in reality, you know Google's already doing this. Google already looks through your email to offer suggestions. Most advertising on the internet already looks at the page that you're looking at and tries to offer you advertisements based on what you're looking at or what you have looked at previously on the internet. So in some ways, I see this pretty much as the same as what we have now with Google and advertising companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks. It sucks that they're going to be able to, that they basically know everything that you're saying on the internet.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something, okay? I'm going to ask you the question, and I didn't talk to you about it on the air, but before we wrap up, you just reminded me. Is Facebook listening to our conversations?
They could be.
But this has been a thing where people have reported that they have conversations and there's ad placements for that conversation. I understand when you're typing. I understand when you're within search and type, and you know the joke is, you know, you see an ad for something and then they write, how come Facebook is putting this out for me? And the reply is because you're searching for it. I get that whole thing. But I'm going to give you two crazy scenarios where I am 100% convinced that Facebook is listening to everyday conversations and figuring out ads based on that.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with Spencer about dieting, and he mentioned bone broth. Okay, as something to do detox with. Bone broth.
Now, was he looking this up, or were you looking it up on the internet at all?
No, neither one of us looked it up.
This is basically just you guys on Skype or on the phone talking.
Yeah, so it is just us at the bar having a discussion. Nobody is looking this up. We're talking about bone broth and detoxing and this and that. The next morning, both of us have a bone broth ad on Facebook. What would the odds be to have a bone broth ad on Facebook? Just yesterday, I was having a discussion with someone about, God, what was the other thing? And I saw it for the second time. I said, maybe it's a coincidence. I did not search for this. I was, who was I? What was the ad? I took a screenshot, actually. Let me look at this. Hold on. I'll tell you right now. I took a screenshot to remind me to talk about this today. Okay, so I went to the Mets game, okay? This is it. I went to the Mets game. I was with Nick. I was with my brother. And all I was drinking was Goose Island IPA. So every time someone say, what do you want to drink? I would say, oh, give me the Goose Island IPA. What do I know? On Twitter, not even Facebook, Goose Island IPA ads coming up. I haven't searched Goose Island IPA. Why would I search for Goose Island? I literally mentioned it for the first time ever. And that is the ad that pops up the next day. So they are targeting ads based on what you're saying.
Yeah, well, this is also a concern with like anything that Google does with their Google voice searching. Like there's, I think there was some stuff in Facebook and also some stuff with Google where they have this ability to listen to your voice.
Yeah.
But I guess in the program, it's set up to either, you know, listen all the time or listen only when you access certain features. Like, I think this was a concern with Facebook, especially with the new Messenger, and that they had this new feature where you could just talk to Facebook Messenger and it would listen to you, but it was only in certain areas, such as, you know, if you were going to make a status post, and that people were concerned that this thing is on all the time. And Facebook was saying that, no, it's not all the time. It's only if you're going to make a Facebook post, but there's people that dispute that.
Yeah, I don't know. It could just be that I had Facebook open, and when the app is open, it's listening. I mean, that's also a possibility. You know, right now I have Twitter open. So is Twitter listening to me when I'm having a conversation? I probably was tweeting. I probably had Twitter open when I was someone said, "What do you want to drink?" And I said, "Goose Island IPA."
You know, it's a catch 22 because on one hand, you want all these cool things that these devices can do in terms of, you know, interpreting your voice and what you're saying and predicting what it is that you want to do.
But it's scary.
But at the same time, you want privacy, and you really necessarily can't have it both ways. Either you're going to give up your privacy in order for these features, or you're going to maintain your privacy by giving up the features.
I'm telling you right now.
It's one or the other, and it's not both.
It's not going to be both. I don't know what it says in the terms of service. I'm sure that it says that they can. I've heard stories that they've denied doing this, and I've heard stories that it's part of what they do. The fact that there was a bone broth ad on both our phones speaks volumes, because that is not an ad that you will see on Facebook ever.
It's the same concept of walking down the street and having all these cameras look at you and then identifying you and then giving you targeted ads based on who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, these cameras see you, they recognize you, and then they display ads because they know who you
are.
What you've been searching for public.
It's like a sci-fi movie. I get like search ads, right? Like if I see that happen all the time on Facebook. Like if I've been searching for something, it'll use that as a source for an ad. If I'm on a Samsung phone, it knows my phone and knows to target the, you know, a case or a battery holder for your phone. But the fact that I'm having a conversation and it's listening and it's targeting ads, that is a little scary.
Yeah.
Or guys, it could be a total coincidence. Or all this could be a total coincidence. But I get like the beer ad. I could say that that's a coincidence. But the fact that there was a bone broth ad.
Yeah.
A little weird.
It's kind of the way things are nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, we've had this targeted advertising now for a while. And now it is expanding based on, you know, having your microphone accessed by Facebook or Google. And being able to listen to what you're saying. And that's in part by design, so that these devices can better predict and respond to what it is that you're asking them to do.
Yeah. So, catch 22. All right, John. Guys, you want to help us out? Go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund us there. You could give us anything, a nickel, a quarter, a dime. We'll take it all. Fund us so we can continue doing this. Also, if you're buying something on Amazon, use our link, gfq.co/Amazon. That's gfq.co/Amazon. Quick favor from all of you. What the Tech and Matt Men are both nominated for a podcast award this year. You go to podcastawards.com. You can vote every single day. Go there and vote for Matt Men in the sports section and What the Tech in the tech section. I think I want to win this year. We're really pushing to win. We'll see how we do. But I really would appreciate you guys. It takes 2 minutes. Just go there, click on those two podcasts, and you're good to go. I believe they send an email confirmation to make sure that you're a real person. Click on that email confirmation and help us win. So it'll be great. You can follow John on Twitter @Suncast. You can follow me @AndrewZarian. And that's it for this week, guys. Take care.